tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. Using the say beginning Dhamma talk or reflections on Dhamma, just as I've done that, paying respects to the Buddha, Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa, and then the Buddhang Dhammang Sanghang Namassami, similarly paying homage to the Buddha and Dhamma and Sangha, so that these are the basis, foundation for saddha and faith, so that the this is what our readings have been about the last yesterday, and probably for the next day or two. And we're on the recollection of the Buddha as a basis for inspiration, and also just to say, remind people that the theme is the application of effort and energy, so that the going to the root of where our energy comes from, sort of tapping into the root of the Buddha's own practice and his example that he set, that taking that to heart and being able to bring that into our daily practice. So the next one is discourse from the Anguttara Threes, number 60, and let's see, there's a discussion between Sangha Rava the Brahman and the Buddha, that bringing up the qualities that are basis for sort of inspiration as well. One Sangharapa, the Brahman, approached the Blessed One and spoke to him thus: "We are Brahmins, Master Gotama. We sacrifice and enjoin others to make sacrifices. Now one who himself sacrifices and one who enjoins others to do so, both engage in a meritorious practice, the offering of sacrifice that extends to many persons. But one of this or that family who goes forth from home into the homeless life, he tames himself alone, calms himself alone, attains Nibbana for himself alone. If this is so, he then engages in a meritorious practice involving only one person, namely the act of going forth into the homeless life. Well, Brahman, I shall ask you a question, and you may answer as you think fit. Now, Brahman, what do you think of this? A Tathagata arises in the world, an Arahant, fully enlightened, accomplished in true knowledge and conduct, sublime, knower of the world, unsurpassed leader of persons to be tamed, teacher of devas and humans, the enlightened one, the blessed one. He speaks thus: Come, this is the way, this is the path, treading which I have directly known and realized that highest consummation of the holy life, which I now proclaim. Come, you too should practice thus, so that you too, by your own effort, may directly know and realize this highest consummation of the holy life and dwell in its attainment. Thus this teacher shows the Dhamma, and others too practice in that way. And of such who do so, there are many hundreds, many thousands, many hundreds of thousands. What do you think, Brahman? Since this is so, is that act of going forth into homelessness a meritorious practice involving only one person or many people? Since it is so, Master Gotama, the going forth is a meritorious practice extending to many people. When this was said, the Venerable Ananda spoke to the Brahman Sangharava thus, "Of these two practices, Brahman, which appeals to you more as being simpler and less harmful, and as giving richer fruit and greater benefit?" Thereupon the Brahman Sangharava said to the Venerable Ananda, "I must honor and praise those like Master Gotama and Master Ananda." For second and third time the Venerable Ananda addressed the Brahman, "I do not ask you, Brahman, whom you honor and praise, but which of those two practices appeals to you more as being simpler and less harmful, and as giving richer fruit and greater benefit?" But also for a second and third time, the Brahman Sangharava replied, "I must honor and praise those like Master Gotama and Master Ananda." Then the Blessed One thought, even for a third time this Brahman Sangharava, on being asked by Ananda a pertinent question, makes evasions and does not reply to it. Should I not release him from that situation? And he spoke to the Brahman, "What might have been the topic of conversation, Brahman, among the king's courtiers when they sat together today in the royal palace?" "The topic of conversation was this, Master Gotama. Formerly there were fewer monks, but there were more who displayed miracles of supernormal power transcending the human level. But now there are more monks, but fewer who display miracles of supernormal power transcending the human level." This was the topic of conversation. "There are three kinds of miracles, Brahman." "What three?" "The miracle of supernormal power, the miracle of thought reading, and the miracle of instruction." "What now is the miracle of supernormal power?" "There is one who enjoys the various kinds of supernormal power. Having been one, he becomes many. Having been many, he becomes one. He appears and vanishes. He goes unhindered through a wall, through a rampart, through a mountain, as if through space. He dives in and out of the earth as if it were water. He walks on water without sinking, as if it were earth. While seated cross-legged, he travels through the sky like a bird. With his hand, he touches and strokes the sun and the moon, so powerful and mighty. He exercises mastery with his body even as far as the Brahma world. This Brahman is called the miracle of psychic power. What now is the miracle of thought reading? There is one who, by means of a sign, declares, 'Thus is your mind, such and such is your mind, thus is your thought.' And however many such declarations he makes, they are exactly so and not otherwise. Another does not make his declarations by means of a sign, but after hearing voices of humans, of spirits, or devas, or by hearing the sound of a person's thought vibrations, or by mentally penetrating the direction of his mental dispositions when he is in a thought-free state of meditation. And however many such declarations he makes, they are exactly so and not otherwise. This is called the miracle of thought reading. And what, Brahman, is the miracle of instruction? There is one who instructs thus: 'You should think in this way and should not think in that way. You should attend to this and not to that. You should give up this and should dwell in the attainment of that.' This is called the miracle of instruction. These, O Brahman, are the three kinds of miracles. Of these three miracles, which appeals to you as the most excellent and sublime?" "As to the miracles of supernormal power and thought reading, Master Gotama, only one who performs them will experience their outcome. They belong only to one who performs them. These two miracles, Master Gotama, appear to me as having the nature of a conjurer's trick. But as to the miracle of instruction, this, Master Gotama, appeals to me as the most excellent and sublime among these three." It is outstanding and remarkable how well this was spoken by Master Gotama. We shall remember Master Gotama as one endowed with these three miracles, for Master Gotama enjoys the various kinds of supernormal power. He mentally penetrates and knows the minds of others, And Master Gotama instructs others thus. You should think in this way and not in that way. You should attend to this and not to that. You should give up this and should dwell in the attainment of that. Indeed, Brahman, you have spoken strikingly befitting words. Hence I too shall confirm that I enjoy the various kinds of supernormal power, that I mentally penetrate and know the minds of others, and that I instruct others how to direct their minds. But is there, apart from Master Gotama, any other monk who is endowed with these three miracles? Yes, Brahman, the monks endowed with these three miracles are not just 100 or 2, 3, 4 or 500, but even more monks than that are thus endowed. And where are these monks now dwelling, Master Gotama? In this very Sangha of monks, Brahman. Excellent Master Gotama, excellent Master Gotama. It is just as if one were to set upright what was overturned, or to reveal what was hidden, or to point out the way to one gone astray, or to hold the lamp in the darkness so that those who have eyes might see forms. Even so has the Dhamma been set forth in various ways by Master Gotama. I now go for refuge to Master Gotama, to the Dhamma, and to the Sangha of monks. Let Master Gotama accept me as a lay follower who has gone for refuge from today until life's end. Then I thought I would read Majjhima 90, which is sort of besides the kind of the relevant emphasis on striving. This just seems to be kind of a realistic account of a day in the life of a Buddha, and it's also a kind of a gentle satire on royal life in the palace. This is Majjhima 90, the Kannakattala Sutta. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Ujjunya in the Kannakattala deer park. Now on that occasion, King Pasenadi of Kosala had arrived at Ujjunya for some business or other. Then he told a man, "Come, good man, go to the Blessed One and pay homage in my name with your head at his feet and ask whether he is free from illness and affliction and is healthy, strong, and abiding in comfort, saying, 'Venerable Sir, King Pasenadi of Kosala pays homage with his head at the Blessed One's feet, and he asked whether the Blessed One is free from illness and abiding in comfort.' And say this, 'Venerable Sir, today King Pasenadi of Kosala will come to see the Blessed One after he has had his breakfast.' 'Yes, Sire,' the man replied, and he went to the Blessed One. And after paying homage to him, he sat down at one side and delivered his message. The sisters Soma and Sakula heard, 'Today King Pasenadi of Kosala will go to see the Blessed One after he has had his breakfast.' Then, while the meal was being served, the two sisters went to the king and said, sisters, these are actual sisters, rather than sort of non-sisters. These are wives of the king. The two sisters went to the king and said, 'Sire, pay homage in our name with your head at the Blessed One's feet and ask whether he is free from illness and abiding in comfort.' Saying, 'Venerable Sir, the sisters Soma and Sakula pay homage with their heads at the Blessed One's feet, and they ask whether he is free from illness and abiding in comfort.' Then when he had finished his breakfast, King Pasenadi of Kosala went to the Blessed One, and after paying homage to him, he sat down at one side and delivered the message of the sisters Soma and Sakula. 'But, great king, could the sisters Soma and Sakula find no other messenger?' 'Venerable Sir, the sisters Soma and Sakula heard, today King Pasenadi of Kosala will go to see the Blessed One after he has had his breakfast. Then, while the meal was being served, the sisters Soma and Sakula came to me and said, Sire, pay homage in our names with our head at the Blessed One's feet, and ask whether he is free from illness and abiding in comfort.' 'May the sisters Soma and Sakula be happy, great king.' Then King Pasenadi of Kosala said to the Blessed One, 'Venerable Sir, I have heard this. The recluse Gotama says, there is no recluse or Brahman who is omniscient and all-seeing, who can claim to have complete knowledge and vision. That is not possible. Venerable Sir, do those who speak thus say what has been said by the Blessed One, and not misrepresent him with what is contrary to fact? Do they explain in accordance with the Dhamma in such a way that nothing that provides a ground for censure can be legitimately deduced from their assertions? Great King, those who speak thus do not say what has been said by me, but misrepresent me with what is untrue and contrary to fact. Then King Pasenadi of Kosala addressed General Vidudhamba, "General, who introduced this story into the palace?" "It was Sanjaya, the Brahmin of the Akasa clan." Then King Pasenadi of Kosala told a man, "Come, good man, in my name, tell Sanjaya, the Brahmin of the Akasa clan, 'Venerable sir, King Pasenadi of Kosala calls you.'" "Yes, sire," the man replied. He went to Sanjaya, the Brahmin of the Akasa clan, and told him, "Venerable sir, King Pasenadi of Kosala calls you." Meanwhile, King Pasenadi of Kosala said to the Blessed One, "Venerable sir, could something else have been said by the Blessed One referring to that, and the person understood it wrongly? In what way does the Blessed One recall making that utterance?" "I recall having actually made the utterance in this way, great king. There is no recluse or Brahman who knows all, who sees all, simultaneously. That is not possible." Maybe see what the footnote says on that. The commentary says that there is no one who can know and see all, past, present, and future, with one act of mental adverting, with one act of consciousness. Thus, this problem is discussed in terms of a single act of consciousness, which is different than what the first one said was can claim to have, was omniscient and all seeing, can claim to have complete knowledge and vision. Something that the Buddha says is within his purview. What the Blessed One has said appears reasonable. What the Blessed One has said appears to be supported by reason. There is no recluse or Brahman who knows all, who sees all simultaneously. That is not possible. There are these four castes, Venerable Sir, the nobles, the Brahmins, the merchants, and the workers. Is there any distinction or difference among them? There are these four castes, great king, the nobles, the Brahmins, the merchants, and the workers. Two of them, that is, the nobles and the Brahmins, are held to be superior, since men pay homage to them, rise up for them, and accord them reverential salutation and polite services. Venerable sir, I was not asking about this present life. I was asking about the life to come. There are these four castes, Venerable Sir, the nobles, the Brahmins, the merchants, and the workers. Is there any distinction or difference among them? Great King, there are these five factors of striving. What five? Here a bhikkhu has faith. He places his faith in the Tathagata's enlightenment thus. The Blessed One is accomplished, fully enlightened, perfect in true knowledge and conduct. Sublime, knower of worlds, incomparable leader of persons to be tamed, teacher of gods and humans, enlightened, blessed. Then he is free from illness and affliction, possessing a good digestion that is neither too cool nor too warm, but medium and able to bear the strain of striving. Then he is honest and sincere and shows himself as he actually is to his teacher and his companions in the holy life. Then he is energetic in abandoning unwholesome states and in undertaking wholesome states, steadfast, launching his effort with firmness and persevering in cultivating wholesome states. Then he is wise. He possesses wisdom regarding rise and disappearance that is noble and penetrative and leads to the complete destruction of suffering. These are the five factors of striving. There are these four castes, great king, the nobles, the Brahmins, the merchants, and the workers. Now, if they possessed these five factors of striving, it would lead to their welfare and happiness for a long time. Venerable sir, there are these four castes, the nobles, the Brahmins, the merchants, and the workers. Now, if they possessed these five factors of striving, would there be any difference among them here in that respect? Here, great king, I say that the difference among them would lie in the diversity of their striving. Suppose there were two tameable elephants, or tameable horses, or tameable oxen, that were well tamed and well disciplined, And two tameable elephants, or tameable horses, or tameable oxen, that were untamed and undisciplined. What do you think, great king? Would the two tameable elephants, or tameable horses, or tameable oxen, that were well tamed and well disciplined, being tamed, acquire the behavior of the tamed? Would they arrive at the grade of the tamed? Yes, venerable sir. And would the two tameable elephants, or tameable horses, or tameable oxen, that were untamed and undisciplined, being untamed, acquire the behavior of the tamed? Would they arrive at the grade of the tamed, like the two elephants or horses or oxen that were well tamed and well disciplined? No, venerable sir. So too, great king, it is not possible that what can be achieved by one who has faith, who is free from illness, who is honest and sincere, who is energetic and who is wise, can be achieved by one who has no faith, who has much illness, who is fraudulent and deceitful, who is lazy, and who is not wise. What the Blessed One has said appears reasonable. What the Blessed One has said appears to be supported by reason. There are these four castes, venerable sir, the nobles, the Brahmins, the merchants, and the workers. Now, if they possess these five factors of striving, and if their striving was right, would there be any difference among them in that respect? Here, great king, in this respect, I say that among them there is no difference, that is, between the deliverance of one and the deliverance of the others. Suppose a man took dry saka wood, lit a fire, and produced heat, and that another man took dry sala wood, lit a fire, and produced heat, and that another man took dry mango wood, lit a fire, and produced heat, and that another man took dry fig wood, lit a fire, and produced heat. What do you think, great king? Would there be any difference among these fires lit with different kinds of wood, that is, between the flame of one and the flame of the others, or between the color of one and the color of the others, or between the radiance of one and the radiances of the others? No, venerable sir. So too, great king, when a fire is kindled by energy, lit by striving, there is, I say, no difference, that is, between the deliverance of one and the deliverance of the others. What the Blessed One has said appears reasonable. What the Blessed One has said appears to be supported by reason. But, venerable sir, how is it? Are there gods? Why do you ask that, great king? Venerable sir, I was asking whether those gods come back to this human state or whether they do not. Great king, those gods who are still subject to affliction come back to this human state. Those gods who are no longer subject to affliction do not come back to this human state. When this was said, General Vidudamba asked the Blessed One, Venerable Sir, can those gods who are still subject to affliction and who come back to this human state topple or banish from that place those gods who are no longer subject to affliction and who do not come back to this human state? Then the Venerable Ananda thought, This General Vidudamba is the son of King Pasenadi of Kosala, and I am the son of the Blessed One. This is the time for one son to talk with another. He said to General Vidudamba, General, I shall ask you a question in return. Answer it as you choose. General, what do you think? There is the whole extent of King Pasenadi of Kosala's realm, where he exercises lordship and sovereignty. Now can King Pasenadi of Kosala topple or banish from that place any recluser Brahman, irrespective of whether that recluser Brahman has merit or not, and whether he leads the holy life or not? He can do so, sir. What do you think, General? There is the whole extent that is not King Pasenadi of Kosala's realm, where he does not exercise lordship and sovereignty. Now can King Pasenadi of Kosala topple or banish from that place any recluse or Brahman, irrespective of whether that recluse or Brahman has merit or not, and whether he leads the holy life or not? He cannot do so, sir. General, what do you think? Have you heard of the gods of the 33? Yes, sir, I have heard of them. And King Pasenadi of Kosala has heard of them too. General, what do you think? Can King Pasenadi of Kosala topple the gods of the 33 or banish them from that place? Sir, King Pasenadi of Kosala cannot even see the gods of the 33, so how could he topple them or banish them from that place? So too, General, Those gods who are still subject to affliction and who come back to this human state cannot even see those gods who are no longer subject to affliction and who do not come back to this human state. So how could they topple them or banish them from that place? Then King Pasenadi of Kosala asked the Blessed One, Venerable Sir, what is this bhikkhu's name? His name is Ananda, great king. Ananda he is indeed. Ananda is joy. Joy he is indeed, Venerable Sir, and Ananda he appears. What the Venerable Ananda has said appears reasonable. What he has said appears to be supported by reason. But, Venerable Sir, how is it? Are there Brahmas? Why do you ask that, great king? Venerable Sir, I was asking whether those Brahmas come back to this human state or whether they do not. Great king, any Brahma who is still subject to affliction comes back to this human state. Any Brahma who is no longer subject to affliction does not come back to this human state. Then a man announced to King Pasenadi of Kosala, Great King, Sanjaya, the Brahma of the Akasa clan, has come. King Pasenadi of Kosala asked Sanjaya, the Brahman of the Akasa clan, Brahman, who introduced this story to the palace? Sire, it was General Vindudabha. General Vindudabha said, Sire, it was Sanjaya, the Brahman of the Akasa clan. Then a man announced to King Pasenadi of Kosala, Sire, it is time to depart. King Pasenadi of Kosala said to the Blessed One, Venerable Sir, we have asked the Blessed One about omniscience, and the Blessed One has answered about omniscience. We approve and accept that answer, and so we are satisfied. We have asked the Blessed One about purification in the four castes, and the Blessed One has answered about purification in the four castes. We approve of and accept that answer, and so we are satisfied. We have asked the Blessed One about the gods, and the Blessed One has answered about the gods. We approve of and accept that answer, and so we are satisfied. We have asked the Blessed One about the Brahmas, and the Blessed One has answered about the Brahmas. We approve of and accept that answer, and so we are satisfied. Whatever we ask the Blessed One, that the Blessed One has answered, we approve of and accept those answers, and so we are satisfied. And now, Venerable Sir, we depart. We are busy and have much to do. Now is the time, Great King, to do as you think fit. Then King Pasenadi of Kosala, having delighted and rejoiced in the Blessed One's words, rose from his seat, and after paying homage to the Blessed One, keeping him on his right, he departed. That's such a great sutta. And besides the good Dhamma in it, there's this lovely sort of vignettes of the confusion of the, even in the sort of the highest echelons of the world. It's just as a, is can't sort of keep from the chaos and confusion. Okay. Go on to the. Are there any questions on the section on the Buddha? We'll go on to the Dhamma. Okay. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Vairanja, at the foot of Naleru's Nimba tree. There, Paharada, a chief of the Asuras, approached the Blessed One, and having paid homage to him, he stood to one side. The Blessed One then spoke to Paharada thus, I suppose, Paharada, the Asuras find delight in the great ocean. They do, Lord. Now, Paharada, how many wonderful and marvelous qualities do the Asuras again and again perceive in the great ocean, so that they take delight in it? There are, Lord, 8 wonderful and marvelous qualities which the Asuras again and again perceive in the great ocean, by reason of which they take delight in it. These are the 8. The great ocean, Lord, slopes away gradually, falls gradually, inclines gradually, not in an abrupt way like a precipice. This is the first wonderful and marvelous quality that the Asuras perceive in the in the great ocean, by reason of which they take delight in it. The great ocean is stable and does not overflow its boundaries. This is the second wonderful and marvelous quality. The great ocean does not tolerate a dead body, a corpse. If there is a dead body in it, the great ocean will quickly carry it to the shore and cast it onto the land. This is the third wonderful and marvelous quality. When those mighty rivers, the Ganges, the Yamuna, the Achiravati, the Sarabhu, the Mahi, reach the great ocean, they lose their former names and designations and are reckoned just as the great ocean. This is the fourth wonderful and marvelous quality. Though all the streams of the world flow into the great ocean and rain falls into it from the sky, yet there appears neither a decrease nor an increase in the great ocean. This is the fifth wonderful and marvelous quality. The great ocean has but one taste, the taste of salt. This is the sixth wonderful and marvelous quality. In the great ocean there are many and variegated precious substances: pearls, gems, lapis lazuli, shells, quartz, corals, silver, gold, rubies, and cat's eyes. This is the seventh wonderful and marvelous quality. The great ocean is the abode of vast creatures: the Timmi, the Timingala, the Timirapingala, Asuras, Nagas, and Gandavas. There are in the great ocean beings 100 yojanas long, or 2, 3, 4, and 500 yojanas long. This is the eighth wonderful and marvelous quality that the Asuras perceive in the great ocean, by reason of which they take delight in it. These, Lord, are the eight wonderful and marvelous qualities which the Asuras again and again perceive in the great ocean, by reason of which they take delight in it. I suppose, Lord, the monks take light in this Dhamma and discipline. They do, Paharada. But, Lord, how many wonderful and marvelous qualities do the monks again and again perceive in this Dhamma and discipline, by reason of which they take delight in it? There are, Paharada, eight wonderful and marvelous qualities in this Dhamma and discipline, which the monks again and again perceive, by reason of which they take delight in it. These are the eight. Just as the great ocean slopes away gradually, falls gradually, inclines gradually, not in an abrupt way like a precipice, even so, Paharada, is this Dhamma and discipline. There is a gradual training, gradual practice, gradual progress. There is no penetration to full knowledge in an abrupt way. This is the first wonderful and marvelous quality in this Dhamma and discipline, which the monks perceive, by reason of which they take delight in it. Just as the great ocean is stable and does not overflow its boundaries, even so, when I have made known a rule of training to my disciples, they will not transgress it even for life's sake. This is the second wonderful and marvelous quality in this Dhamma and discipline. Just as the great ocean will not tolerate a dead body, a corpse, but quickly carries it to the shore and casts it onto the land, even so, the Sangha will not tolerate within its ranks a person who is immoral, of bad character, of impure and suspicious conduct, secretive in his actions, not a true ascetic, but rather a sham ascetic, not chaste, but pretending to be chaste, rotten to the core, lustful and of vile behavior. In such a case, the Sangha quickly assembles and expels such a person. Even if seated in the midst of the monks' assembly, yet he is far from the Sangha, and the Sangha is far from him. This is the third wonderful and marvelous quality in this Dhamma and discipline. Just as the mighty rivers on reaching the great ocean lose their former names and designations and are just reckoned as the great ocean, even so, when members of the four castes, nobles, Brahmins, commoners, and menials, go forth from home into the homeless life in this Dhamma and discipline proclaimed by the Tathagata, they lose their former names and lineage and are reckoned only as ascetics following the son of the Sakyans. This is the fourth wonderful and marvelous quality in this Dhamma and discipline. Just as in the great ocean, neither a decrease nor an increase will appear, though all the streams of the world flow into it and rain falls into it from the sky. Even so, even if many monks attain final Nibbana in the Nibbana element that is without residue left, there is no decrease or increase in the Nibbana element that is without residue left. This is the fifth wonderful and marvelous quality in this Dhamma and discipline. Just as the great ocean has but one taste, the taste of salt, Even so, this Dhamma and discipline has but one taste, the taste of liberation. This is the sixth wonderful and marvelous quality in this Dhamma and discipline. Just as in the great ocean there are many and variegated precious substances, such as pearls, gems, etc., even so in this Dhamma and discipline there is much that is precious. These are the precious things in it: the four foundations of mindfulness, the four right efforts, the four bases of success, the five spiritual faculties, the five spiritual powers, the seven factors of enlightenment, the Noble Eightfold Path. This is the seventh wonderful and marvelous quality in this Dhamma and discipline. Just as the great ocean is the abode of vast creatures, even so is this Dhamma and discipline the domain of great beings. The stream enterer and one practicing for the realization of the fruit of stream entry. The once returner and one practicing for the realization of the fruit of once returning. The non-returner and one practicing for the realization of the fruit of non-returning. The arahant and one practicing for arahantship. This is the eighth wonderful and marvelous quality in this Dhamma and discipline, which the monks perceive again and again, by reason of which they take delight in it. These, Paharada, are the eight wonderful and marvelous qualities in this Dhamma and discipline, which the monks perceive again and again, by reason of which they take delight in it. Okay, this next discourse is from the Majjhima Nikaya, Majjhima 108, and just be a selection from this. At the beginning of the sutta, this is the Gopaka Moggallana Sutta. This is all about Dhamma being refuge. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Venerable Ananda was living at Rajagaha in the bamboo grove, the squirrel sanctuary, not long after the Blessed One had attained the final Nibbana. The commentary says that after the Buddha's relics had been distributed, Venerable Ananda had come to Rajagaha for the recitation of the Dhamma at the First Great Council. Now on that occasion, King Ajatasattu, Vaidehiputta of Magadha, being suspicious of King Pajota, was having Rajagaha fortified. That King Pajota was a friend of King Bimbisara of Magadha, who had been killed by his son Ajatasattu. And according to the commentary, Ajatasattu thought King Pajota might seek to avenge his friend's murder. Then, when it was morning, the Venerable Ananda dressed, and taking his bowl and outer robe, went into Rajagaha for alms. Then the Venerable Ananda thought, "It is still too early to wander for alms in Rajagaha. Suppose I went to the Brahmin Gopaka Moggallana at his workplace." So the Venerable Ananda went to the Brahmin Gopaka Moggallana at his workplace. The Brahmin Gopaka Moggallana saw the Venerable Ananda coming in the distance and said to him, "Let Master Ananda come. Welcome to Master Ananda. It is long since Master Ananda found an opportunity to come here. Let Master Ananda be seated. This seat is ready." The Venerable Ananda sat down on the seat made ready. The Brahmin Gopaka Moggallana took a low seat, sat down at one side, and asked the Venerable Ananda, "Master Ananda, is there any single bhikkhu who possesses in each and every way all those qualities that were possessed by Master Gotama, accomplished and fully enlightened?" "There is no single bhikkhu, Brahman, who possesses in each and every way all those qualities that were possessed by the Blessed One, accomplished and fully enlightened. For the Blessed One was the arouser of the unarisen path, the producer of the unproduced path, the declarer of the undeclared path. He was the knower of the path, the finder of the path, the one skilled in the path. But his disciples now abide following that path and become possessed of it afterwards." But this discussion between the Venerable Ananda and the Brahmin Gopaka Moggallana was interrupted, for then the Brahmin Vasakara, the minister of Magadha, while supervising the work at Rajagaha, went to the Venerable Ananda at the workplace of the Brahmin Gopaka Moggallana. He exchanged greetings with the Venerable Ananda, and when this courteous and amiable talk was finished, he sat down at one side and asked the Venerable Ananda, "For what discussion are you sitting together here now, Master Ananda? And what was your discussion that was interrupted?" "Brahman, the Brahman Gopaka Moggallana asked me, 'Master Ananda, is there any single bhikkhu who possesses in each and every way all those qualities that were possessed by Master Gotama, accomplished and fully enlightened?' I replied to the Brahman Gopaka Moggallana, 'There is no single bhikkhu, Brahman, who possesses in each and every way all those qualities that were possessed by the Blessed One, accomplished and fully enlightened. For the Blessed One was the arouser of the unarisen path, the producer of the unproduced path, the declarer of the undeclared path. He was the knower of the path, the finder of the path, the one skilled in the path. But his disciples now abide, following that path, and become possessed of it afterwards. This was our discussion that was interrupted when you arrived. Is there, Master Ananda, any single bhikkhu who was appointed by Master Gotama thus? 'He will be your refuge when I am gone,' and whom you now have recourse to?' 'There is no single bhikkhu, Brahman, who was appointed by the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened, thus. 'He will be your refuge when I am gone, and whom we now have recourse to.' But is there, Master Ananda, any single bhikkhu who has been chosen by the Sangha and appointed by a number of elder bhikkhus thus? 'He will be our refuge after the Blessed One is gone, and whom you now have recourse to.' 'There is no single bhikkhu, Brahman, who has been chosen by the Sangha and appointed by a number of elder bhikkhus thus. 'He will be our refuge after the Blessed One has gone, and whom we now have recourse to.' But if you have no refuge, Master Ananda, what is the cause for your concord?" "We are not without a refuge, Brahman. We have a refuge. We have the Dhamma as a refuge." "But when you were asked, 'Is there, Master Ananda, any single bhikkhu who is appointed by Master Gotama thus? 'He will be your refuge when I am gone,' and whom you now have recourse to, you answered, 'There is no such single bhikkhu, and whom we now have recourse to.' When you are asked, 'Is there, Master Ananda, any single bhikkhu who has been chosen by the Sangha and appointed by a number of elder bhikkhus thus? 'He will be our refuge after the Blessed One is gone,' and whom you now have recourse to, you answered, 'There is no such single bhikkhu whom we now have recourse to.' When you were asked, 'But if you have no refuge, Master Ananda, what is the cause of your concord?' you answered, 'We are not without a refuge, Brahman. We have a refuge. We have the Dhamma as our refuge.' Now how should the meaning of these statements be regarded, Master Ananda?" "Brahman, the Blessed One who knows and sees, accomplished and fully enlightened, has prescribed the course of training for bhikkhus, and he has laid down the Patimokkha. On the Uposatha day, as many of us as live in dependence upon a single village district meet together in unison, and when we meet, we ask one who knows the Patimokkha to recite it. If a bhikkhu remembers an offense or a transgression while the Patimokkha is being recited, we deal with him according to the Dhamma in the way we have been instructed. It is not the worthy ones who deal with us, it is the Dhamma that deals with us." And there's a footnote on that. "The import of this statement is that the Sangha is not governed by the personal judgments of its members, but by the Dhamma and the disciplinary code laid down for it by the Buddha. In this, the bhikkhus follow the Buddha's final injunction," which is from the Digha Nikaya. "What I have taught and explained to you as Dhamma and discipline will, at my passing, be your teacher." That's probably enough for now.
Ram Samaya Samakataya Satukara Satama Sayana.